How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our True Crime Podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How you doing?
Oh, you know, pretty good.
Good.
How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm just sitting here and having a good time, ready to hear your case that you have. Heard you got a little special tie-in.
I do. Okay, so you know, We both love Dexter. And Dexter just premiered on Sunday, if you haven't caught it. I was very impressed with it. I love it. I love him.
I love him, too. I think he's great.
It's just awesome. So
I liked everything that he's done, like 6 Feet Under, and I loved him in 6 Feet Under.
Watched it all. Let me tell you. Did you like it?
I did like it. I was kind of disappointed because I wanted, I don't know, you know how you remember things so fondly that
it was all I could do to watch this because it was like going and dating an old boyfriend. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like it was, I did not want it to disappoint.
Right. And for me, it was, I wanted the same old Dexter. Like I wanted him right on a boat in Miami, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And
yep.
It's the same characters. It's just different locations. So it's still different. I have to relearn Dexter now. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? He's not my comfortable serial killer. He's like this.
He's not the serial killer we all love. A different serial killer now. Yeah.
And then my husband, I had to take the girls shopping. They needed new undergarments. But when we came home, he's like, I've got Dexter all queued up for us. And I'm like, okay, let's start. And he puts it on and I'm all excited. I'm like, wow, they really made Michael C. Hall look like he did back then. And then he like walks into his apartment and I'm like, wow, he's back in Miami now in the apartment. Yeah, my husband put on episode 1, season 1 of Dexter.
That's funny you say that because I was talking to Glenn from Glenn Knows Stuff podcast. And I was like, you know what? No man could ever pull this off. I mean, no woman could ever pull this off because it's 10 years later. He looks exactly the same, right?
Yeah,
he does. And I was like, ooh, yeah.
His hair's a little shorter. And a little thinner, but otherwise he's exactly the same. But yeah, I'm like, this can't be the new season, honey. He's like, it is, I swear. I'm like, it's not. He can't be in Miami because they found out he was a serial killer. No, I don't think they did. I'm like, yeah, it's been a while,
That's the cutest. I love it.
So we had to, I'm like, can we just check just to make sure? He's like, well, it's called Dexter, isn't it? And I'm like, it's called Dexter New Blood. Yeah. He's like, oh, okay, here it is. So I'm like, God bless him. But I'm like, wow, this is kind of weird. And then, you know, he's trying to tell me, oh, they're just doing, you know, a flashback. It's just a flashback. And I'm like, I don't think it's flashback.
Nope, it's not.
No, it's not. Amazing. But it was good. So. I did enjoy it. Like I said, I was a little disappointed because I'm thinking old Dexter. But
no, I love it. I think they did it well.
All right, we've jibber-jabbered enough, and we don't want anybody to get upset with us. So do you want to start whatever your case is?
Here we go.
All right.
Quote, this story is based on true events. The names and events were altered slightly to protect the guilty. This is the story of my progression into becoming a serial killer. I don't remember the exact place and time it was that I decided to become a serial killer, but I remember the sensation that hit me when I committed to the decision. It was a rush of pure euphoria. there was something about urgently exploring my dark side that greatly appealed to me. This could be a statement by Dexter Morgan from the Showtime hit series Dexter, but it is not. Dexter was a fictional character. This killer is very real and perhaps was stopped before he had a chance to become as infamous as Dexter. It all started with an online dating site, a place where lonely people can find someone that they can connect with and hopefully become a pair. Dating sites have helped many find their soulmate and live a happy life, but unfortunately, it has been used as a hunting ground for a few unsuspecting souls. One of these such souls was a man by the name of John Brian Altinger. On October 10th, 2008, the 38-year-old Johnny had joined Plenty of Fish looking for love and had made a match. He met a lady named Jen, or Jan, depending on which site you look at, that he really seemed to like. Johnny told friends he and her were going to meet up and hang out. Friends were excited for Johnny, who always seemed to struggle in finding the one. Everything seemed normal until a few days later. Johnny started emailing friends. As in several friends and several emails. The friends began to compare notes and the emails were worded exactly the same. Johnny, or someone acting as Johnny, told the friends that he would be back after the holidays. It's October, mind you. Then his status on Facebook changed from single to in a relationship. Johnny told friends that he and this girl hit it off and they had decided to go on vacation to Costa Rica on a surprise trip.
That's a nice surprise.
Now, while this is odd, it could happen. However, it seems Johnny sent an email to his boss, and this is weird, stating that he was quitting. He was resigning. This was out of character for Johnny. This was enough for a friend to break into his apartment and see what was going on. Right away, they find his passport, no missing luggage, and a house that seemed to be expecting its owner to return after a night, not an extended vacation. The only missing items were his car, car keys, and a wallet. You know what would be missing on a normal night out. They called the Edmonton police, this is in Canada, by the way, and they told them their concerns. 7 days later, officers finally began an investigation. First, police go to the airport and they look for his car and they can't find it. They search his name on the passenger manifestos and it is not anywhere to be found. Guess what's going on? They can't find it. Another friend comes forward with an email that seemed to really be from Johnny, And it was sent prior to his date. It was stating that he went to go meet a new mystery woman. And in it, like he jokingly said, hey, I'm going to go meet this girl. And just in case, hey, if something happens to me, it was that kind of thing. Here's the address, right? Not good. Here's the address.
That's a smart thing to do. Very smart thing to do.
It really is. But yeah, who thinks you're going to, something's going to happen? Well, yeah.
Well, you and I do all the time.
All the time. Thank you.
Yeah.
Seems like a good place to start. Police head over to the house where Johnny was headed for the evening. They wanted to see what was going on. They arrived to a garage owned by a budding young filmmaker named Mark Twitchell. The garage was locked, so police call Mark and say, hey, would you come to the garage and let us in? And of course, he says, yeah. And you know what? I'll give you an interview, too. Mark said that he'd be right there. Mark arrived, and he was ready to open the garage. But guess what, Jen? It seemed someone changed the locks on the garage that he was renting. Strange, right?
Very strange.
Who knew? Police tell Mark that they can get someone there to break the lock with his permission, and he complies. Mark even agrees to accompany police back to the station to answer questions. At the station, Mark is forthcoming with his passion of filmmaking, as well as some other topics. Topics that, maybe set off a red flag. Mark tells them that he had rented the garage to use this as a space for his film project, a thriller, in fact.
Oh.
That's fine and believable. But what seems strange is the fact that Mark tells officers he met Johnny, the man that was missing, just prior to leaving for his vacation with his new love. Okay. Mark said that Johnny needed to get rid of his car. He wanted to sell his car, a Mazda 6, and that Mark bought the car from Johnny for an astounding, you ready, 40 Canadian dollars. That's about $32 in U.S.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's cheap. I'll take three of them.
Of course, Mark didn't have the title signed over to him. In fact, there was no legal paperwork stating that Johnny sold his car to this man, a stranger. What about that padlock? Mark explained that the garage was basically a movie set, a movie studio, and that there were lots of people coming and going because, you know, he is an up-and-coming, big-time director. Can't make this up, Jen. Mark Andrew Twitchell was born in Edmonton, Alberta on July 4th, 1979. Mark had always dreamed of making it big as a director, and by all standards, he was trying to make it happen. In 2000, Mark graduated from Northern Alberta Institute of Technology with a degree in radio and television arts. Same thing I had. It didn't serve me well. In 2001, Mark met, married, and moved to Illinois in the United States, by the way, because he's from Canada. But the union would only last until 2004. He met another woman after that. He was starting to have some moderate success. In 2007, he directed a prequel. This reminds me of Steve Flanders. To Star Wars, entitled Star Wars Secrets of the Rebellion. Even though the film was never released, he did get Jeremy Bullock to provide a cameo in the film. Jeremy had played Boba Fett. Is that how you say it? Boba Fett.
Boba Fett.
Yep, there you go.
He's one of my favorite characters in Star Wars.
Not a big Star Wars
fan. He's a bounty hunter.
Yeah. So there you go. In 2008, he wrote a script called Day Players, and then in September 2008, he shot a short entitled House of Cards. It was this film that was shot partially in that rented garage where Johnny was supposed to meet that lady. Mark tells officers that the horror film he used for the garage, which was called House of Cards, like I said, had since wrapped production. The film had just happened to be, here's a shocker, Jen, about a serial killer.
Oh.
And he was currently working on another project. He left that
right
behind.
What you know. Right what you know.
As officers continue to talk to Mark, Mark starts to wonder out loud that perhaps someone is setting him up. Mark was well-spoken, articulate, and seemed to open to helping police, yet police know something just isn't quite right. They keep pressing him. At this point, officers apply for a search warrant to take a deeper look into that garage, and it was denied. It was rejected because they wanted to search, and no one was even sure there was a crime committed. Somebody was missing, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he had anything to do with it, right?
Right.
So they call Mark and ask if they can search the garage, courtesy of a non-warrant. Mark said, sure. The detective told him that he had to sign a consent form and that they would venture over to see Mark and get that signature. While a team of officers are at the garage, they decide Mark needs to come in for a quick chat at 10:30 p.m. on a Sunday night. Okay. The detectives decide that they just want to be open with Mark and said, you know, we really don't have any idea what happened to Johnny. We're at a loss. And while it is true they are at a loss, it is also a way to get Mark to open up and for detectives to see what he will say or won't say. They ask Mark again about how he came to Johnny's car. Mark, calm and cool, tells them once again that on the night Johnny disappeared, Johnny approached Mark and seemed in a hurry to get rid of his car for whatever cash he had on him. Okay. Mark mentions that Johnny told him he had met a rich lady and they were leaving the country together for a while. They're going on vacation. Mark said that he thought it was weird since the car was in good shape, but hey, why fight a good thing, right? Why fight a good deal? Mark did mention that there was one thing about the car he didn't like. It was a stick shift, and Mark didn't know how to drive a stick shift. So he took it to his friend's house, and he parked it there in the driveway. After finding this out, police sent an officer to the friend's house, and yep, it was there, and the car was just fine. There was no sign of Johnny, meaning, you know, nobody's in the trunk or anything like that. As the interview continued into the early morning hours, Detective Clark just kept going over the details again and again, then back to the beginning and through it all again. The hours went on, and finally Mark asked if he was being charged. The answer was no, and with that, Mark said, hey, I'm out, I'm leaving. Detective Clark, who was in charge of the investigation, walks Mark outside, and during that walk, Detective Clark tells him that he believes, yeah, I know you're involved in this, and guess what, we're going to figure this out sooner or later. Detective Clark mentions one last thing, and it is this that finally broke Mark. Clark tells Mark that he will not be going home in his car. You don't get to take it because they're impounding the car. As if Mark had walked into an invisible wall, he immediately stopped and said, hey, I need my car for work. The detective said, nope, not happening. And then Mark said, well, I need to get something out of there. Once again, Detective Clark said, nope, you're not getting anything. That car is being impounded and it is ours. Mark was let go and the police could only wait, but they wouldn't just sit by. They put Mark under surveillance, hoping he would mess up. He was giving them nothing that would help them determine that he did indeed know where Johnny was. Police hit the street. They start knocking on doors to see what neighbors thought of filmmaker Mark. And boy, did they get a weird story. It seems that a neighbor couple went out for a walk when they stumbled across a man who had came to them begging for help. He tells them he was being robbed and needed help. The words weren't even out of his mouth when another person, a man wearing a hoodie and a mask, stumbled up and onto them, basically into them. When the masked man saw the couple, he took cover behind the garage. He was watching them. So he literally was chasing the guy and he stumbled into them and then was like, oh no. And then he went back behind the garage. The couple were scared, so they went home and called police. They thought this was like some sort of setup, which I don't kind of blame them. It was like 7:30 in the evening. It wasn't, you know, just weird. The police arrived and looked around and they could not find a masked bandit or the man who claimed to need help. This was approximately a week before Johnny went missing. You know the story, right?
A little bit. Yep. Yeah.
As the investigation was moving forward, the police seized Mark's computer and his hard drive. The film that Mark had told officers about, the horror short, was on his hard drive. Strangely, the film echoes a bit too close to home for police. The film centers on a killer who poses as a woman online to snare unsuspecting men to meet up with her for a fling. However, instead of a beautiful lady, the man is met with a stun gun and then he is chopped up into pieces.
Oh, nice.
Interesting, but not enough for an arrest. Also on the computer, they find a woman who Mark had befriended. Police reach out to her and they find out that he had pretended that he was Michael C. Hall, the lead actor in the TV series Dexter, who plays what? Dexter.
Dexter.
Mark finally came clean and told her who he really was. But this went on for months, by the way. And they ended up being online friends. That was until one Monday he contacted her and he said, quote, I think I crossed the line over the weekend and I really enjoyed it.
Huh.
Needless to say, that friendship tapered off after that.
I would think so. I would hope so anyway.
Don't know what's going on, Minnan. No. It was Halloween evening when Mark was thrown to the ground by the Edmonton SWAT team. Those that knew Mark believed this had to be a publicity stunt for an upcoming movie or perhaps a way to call attention to himself and then secure money from backers to launch that career he so desperately wanted. Those thoughts or hopes faded when police held a news conference. In the news conference, police revealed that on the computer that they had seized from him, there was a file that had been deleted. Well, Jen, we all know you can delete stuff on that computer, but that doesn't mean it goes away forever now, does it?
Nope. Most of the time, it comes right back up with the right person.
Right there.
The folder was titled S as in Sam, K as in Kiss, Confessions, or Serial Killer Confessions. It read like a play-by-play of murder, giving graphic details about killing. The police used this diary of sorts to compare with some of the possible evidence they had found at that rented garage. In the confessional tape, the killer mentions using a game processing kit to cut up the body, and in that rented garage, they found a game processing kit. Shocker. The killer mentions burning the body in a burn barrel in the back of his parents' house, and yep, there was a burn barrel at his parents' house, but it was now gone, and the only remnants were burnt grass on the ground. The strangest part was yet to come. In his diary, he mentioned that he had attempted to kill before by overtaking a man while wearing a mask and tasing the man, but the man was able to get away. Since no one came forward, perhaps this was all just in Mark's mind, being a director and all. Maybe it was just a story. Police decide to plead to the public and even release a photo of the mask to see if anyone would come forward. It was only a few hours until police get a phone call from a man named
Giles Tiltrot.
It was 2008 when 26-year-old Giles joined an internet dating site and met a 24-year-old beauty named Sheena. Sheena wanted to meet up with him, but since they didn't know each other very well, she gave him directions to her house. But it would turn out that he needed to do a few directions, if you will. He needed to enter through a garage first before coming to the house. As Giles entered, and before he even knew what was going on, he was grabbed from behind and punched. He managed to make out that it was a man standing over him wearing a hockey mask. He thought he must have been set up and was being mugged as the man pulled out a gun and told him to put his hands on his back and close his eyes. He was flipping him around on the ground, basically. Knowing he had to make a move if he wanted to actually survive, he tried to grab the gun, and when he did, he realized it was fake. It was a plastic gun. Now, this was good news for him, and he would make a break for it, rolled outside the garage door, despite the attacker trying to pull him back in. Can you imagine? Like, he was underneath the door. The door is open like 12 inches. He's rolling out. The attacker has beat him. He's trying to get away, and this guy is, like, pulling his feet back in.
Seriously, that's, like, stuff that's in the movies. Seriously.
Like Dexter. Mm-hmm. So as he rolled out and he stumbled away, he did manage to get the attention of a couple that was out for an evening walk. Now, this couple, they were freaked out. They thought that, what? It was early. It was, like, 7:30. So Giles knew that he should go to the police, but he was embarrassed. He was catfished by a man pretending to be a woman who had set him up and attacked him. He figured it was his dumb mistake and he'd be better to just move on and forget all about it. Until that 4 weeks later, when he saw that hockey mask on the news alongside that infamous garage. This time, however, the man that they were speaking of did not escape and was now missing.
Ugh.
Once back in the safety of his home, Giles went back onto the website determined to get all the information he could find out about that lady friend, Sheena, but it was all gone. Along with all the messages that they had spoke, everything was gone. Her profile, the messages, everything gone. And that right there should be a red flag.
Yeah. I mean, that's would be 101 to get rid of it all.
Thank you. So right now, police are thinking, wow, okay. They're pretty sure that SK Confessions, aka Serial Killer Confessions, was in fact Mark's truth. The only problem is that no one knew where Johnny was or if he was even alive. Detectives decide to take Mark back to the garage that was once a soundstage and perhaps even the scene of a violent crime. Just like an episode of Dexter, the TV killer that Mark fancied, the garage was exactly like Dexter's kill room. There was the game processing kit, an autopsy table, and the ever so popular clear plastic sheeting. There were knife sets and plastic bags. It was as if Mark had become Dexter. The only thing is, Dexter was a fictional character who killed not so nice people who escaped justice. Mark killed a man who was a good person, and this was not a television show. They still needed to find Johnny, or what was left of Johnny, because frankly, this would be a weird story to try to get a jury to believe. Perhaps it was just a publicity stunt, or the ramblings of a creative writer. With nothing to lose, Detective Clark decides to pressure Mark into telling the truth of what happened to Johnny. The detective takes Mark for a drive around Edmonton, hoping he would give up some information as to where he placed the parts of Johnny's body. He was not giving anything up, so they take him back to the killing garage, hoping that this perhaps would make him break or at least show some remorse. But just like the Dexter character, Mark does not. Like Dexter said, quote, pretend, you pretend the feelings are there for the world, for the people around you, end quote. At a dead end, the detectives decided to take another look at the SF confession and into the computer to see if maybe, just maybe, it was hiding another secret. It was. It was another deleted version of the SK confessions, but with a different ending. This ending included a different neighborhood that had a sewer. Detective Clark thought this was it. This was it. This is all he needed. He put together a team to go through the sewer looking for anything that may help them find Johnny, but they were unsuccessful with the search. The case was at a standstill and would remain that way for a year and a half until a phone call came to police. The man wanted to talk to Detective Clark and give him a map. The man was Mark Twitchell, and the map was from Google with a handwritten phrase saying, "This is where you can find Johnny." It was behind Mark's parents' house. It had been searched immediately when Mark came onto the radar, and they found nothing. The search was just a bit off, you see, half a block to be exact. With the map, they went into the sewers yet again, and they found Johnny's body in plastic wrap, exactly where the map said it would be. This was right before Mark's trial was set to begin. Mark admitted dumping Johnny's body in that sewer drain, but he never said he was actually the one that killed him. No problem, because police were able to prove that Johnny was murdered in that very garage. Police were careful to search that garage, and it told quite the story. The garage was drenched in luminol. It is the agent that makes blood glow under blacklight, and boy, did this garage glow. The entire floor lit up with splatters of light up and down the walls. They found a tooth near the garage drain that was determined to belong to Johnny. And that game processing kit that had been wiped clean. But, you know, DNA does not easily go away. Mm-mm. Each weapon in that kit had the DNA of Johnny on it. Then there is his car. In Mark's car, there are sticky notes on the dashboard, which had Johnny's address on it, as well as a knife with dried blood on it. The blood turned out to be Johnny's. He didn't hide very much. During the trial, Mark took the stand and proceeded to tell the jury that, yes, he killed Johnny. And what he did was really, and you got to stay with me here because I had to read this several times to understand this. What he did was blend reality and fiction. And if one does it well, no one can tell that fiction is actually reality. With his idea, he would be developing a form of entertainment which would blend both. And as if this is not weird enough, Mark went on. Mark said he needed to commit a sort of staged attacks that would cause no harm but live on in infamy on the internet. These attacks would be just like the ones in the movie and the book, and people would then need to come out and Google if these attacks were real and find out which were real and which were fake. You know, fiction versus reality. It would all be to help promote his film. This is what he said on the stand, by the way. He even named it MAPO, M-A-P-O, which stands for Motive Angle Psychosis Layering Entertainment. What? He goes on to explain that using some weird thing about being on a beach and not really being on a beach. I didn't really get all this, but I was like, okay. You're on a beach and you see a tree, but it's not really a tree and you're not really on a beach. It's a photo and the photo's up close. Yeah.
Is it like a virtual reality type thing?
I'm guessing it's sort of like an interactive play virtual reality thing. Like, yeah, that's
okay.
So you're watching this movie and then you have to go figure out if killings slash attacks are real.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Mark explained that his attack on Giles was a stunt and he allowed him to escape Jen. That was all on purpose. It was a stunt on Johnny as well, but things didn't go as planned. Mark would claim that Johnny was mad that this was all fake, that there was not a woman when he showed up, and Johnny attacked Mark because he was so angry, and Mark reacted simply to save his life. It was just self-defense, he would claim. As strange as it seems, the jury may believe it. Is it maybe even not that strange? Method acting and all. Thankfully, that was not the case. Mark Twitchell was convicted of first-degree murder and was sentenced to life without parole for at least 25 years. It's Canada. Lawyers tried to find a way to incorporate that attempted murder charge with Giles into the case, but they could not do it legally. They couldn't bind them together. It wasn't acceptable. They also thought that, you know what, since he ended up serving life, it was okay. Mark would blame the extensive media coverage, and this was a huge case. It's Dexter, like we all over, that it was unfair for him to receive a fair trial, and he tried to use this for grounds for an appeal, but thankfully that never came to fruition. After the trial, an additional file on his computer was released, and it was never brought up in the trial. It was named, quote, a profile of a psychopath, end quote. It details personality and behavior disorders with a self-analysis. It was left out of the trial because they believed, basically, it would be Mark stating that he was, in fact, a psychopath, and that would taint the trial.
Just a little bit.
You'd think, right? Michael C. Hall called into a radio show in December 2012 and commented that he did not think Dexter encouraged serial killer wannabes or serial killing. He followed that up with, he, quote, wouldn't stop making Dexter because someone was fascinated by it only in that way. I tried to tell myself that their fixated nature would have done it in one way or the other, but it seems that Dexter had something to do with it. It's horrifying, end quote. And that is the story of Mark Twitchell that ended up being the Dexter Killer. That's what they named him in the press, by the way.
The Dexter Killer.
Yeah.
That's who we wanted to be.
So, yeah. I'm
not wow. Seeing... Crazy. Yeah. Give me regular Dexter any day.
Well, just like the fact that he, I don't know, like setting them up. I had said to you earlier today that I thought maybe I'd read his diary. So he made this whole diary, and the diary is verbatim. It is step by step of all of this, like who he was going to target. Who it was 42 pages long, though. So it was
all premeditated.
Well, they could connect it so that he talked about that Giles got away, a person. He didn't name the person, but the person got away, and the other one, and how he did it, and he... It is verbatim what he did.
It was his journal.
Yeah.
Was that in the...
trial? Yes, they brought that up. Yes.
Okay.
He said that he did admit to killing Johnny, but it was an accident. because it was part of his stick to make the whole thing real for the movies. In a weird kind of way, it's kind of believable. And so then other people came forward and said that he wasn't a killer, but he was. But he just wanted to kill somebody so that he could know what it felt like to have his actors kill somebody.
But it's...
I know.
I want you to pretend kill somebody, but I'm going to go ahead and really kill somebody.
The fake gun, and then they tasered him, and just like leaving a post-it note in his car about Johnny's address. Come on. Really?
Like, yeah, he didn't seem very...
Oh, remorseful. It was almost like right. It was a film to him. So, and by all accounts, FYI, he wasn't that great. So, like I had told you
wasn't
earlier,
that great, what, at murdering people? Or wasn't
no,
that
it,
great
like,
at
he
film?
Wasn't that great of a filmmaker / playwright or whatever. So, like I told you, I was going to maybe read his diary, and then it was like too long, so I didn't. I chose not to do it.
You can find it online if we want to read it, right?
You know, I already bought it. I bought it. Oh. So I'm gonna post it for people so that but it's exactly like, and then I'm driving down and I see this guy. And then I mean, it is exactly what he did. So one of the reporters that covered the case he really does kind of look like Dexter. And you know what? He kind of really does.
Oh, really?
He does.
I wonder if that was part of his obsession, too. Like, somebody made an offhanded comment about, you look like Michael C. Hall.
He looked like a clean-cut guy, much like Michael C. Hall.
Mm-hmm. Now I have to look him up. I've never seen what he looks like or anything.
I'll send you to it. Okay. Yeah, I'll send it to you. Yeah. All right. That's my...
Interesting. Give me regular Dexter any day instead of 2-bit copycat.
Thank you.
I developed a little crush on him in 6 Feet Under. I liked him a lot in 6 Feet Under.
He's amazing.
All right. Anything else for us? Got any?
I didn't realize that I watched the end of Shameless, so now I'm binging that. I thought I watched it all. I thought it was done. I thought season 10 was the finale. It's not. So now I'm watching that. And
Yeah, so I kind of lost interest after the sister. No, not much. I had to go to the doctor. I won't be getting my surgery until like the 22nd of...
Your
December.
Facial reconstructive surgery because you're ugly?
Yeah, that's it. But on the way there, I had to stop and my daughter wanted something from Trader Joe's. So I stopped real quick because it was on the way.
Peanut butter pretzels, those are my favorite.
But I went there and there was this woman in this car. And I'm assuming, I don't know what she wanted. The parking lot was filled. There was one parking space that she was... looking like she was trying to go in. Her car kept jerking like she's driving a stick. She couldn't do it. There was another woman next to her that was leaving the parking space, but she was like taking forever. I waited. I'm not joking. I waited for 2-3 minutes and the woman's just sitting there. She's not pulling into the parking space. She's not doing anything. I've got
a
doctor's appointment I have to do. No, she's probably our age, maybe younger. I don't know.
So 25?
Yeah. So she's like pulling in and out. And so I'm just like, she's not going to take this parking space. I don't know what she's doing. The other woman, I don't know. So I just pulled in for a parking space, right? The other woman starts backing out as soon as I back in. Get out of the car, and all of a sudden, this woman honks the horn and starts yelling at me.
At you?
Yeah. You fat bitch. And I, like, turn around, and I'm like, you know what? I've been called fat bitch so much in my life, it might as well be my Christian name. Seriously.
Why would
if you're
going to
insult
that?
Me, say something. That's my parking space. I'm like, I waited for you for 3 minutes to get that parking space, and you just sat there. I go, that woman just pulled out. Just pulled out. There's another parking space. What do you want me to do? And she got pissed, and all of a sudden, one of the Trader Joe's employees was like on break or whatever, and I looked at him and gave him a like, what the hell look, and he started laughing. So I went in. The thing thinking, you know, if she comes at me in the store, I'm just going to go to a manager and saying she was
abusing,
being belligerent.
Yeah.
No, she left. She didn't even park. I went through the parking lot to see where she parked, not just because I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, she left.
That's
I don't think
what
she knew
she
how
does.
To drive a car.
That's
what I think it is. Because she just stood there. And it's like, did you need 2 parking spaces to park the car?
Probably.
Yeah, I don't
or
know.
Or that's what she does. She just, like...
insults people?
Yes, exactly.
But I'm like, seriously.
People are like that. You know that.
Don't call women fat bitches, because you know what? That is the insult, the go-to insult. It doesn't make any... Who cares?
Yeah.
I've heard it so much, like I said, it should be my Christian name. I answer to it. Whatever. It pissed me off, but what can you do?
I'm sorry. That's terrible.
It's
not,
it's whatever. If you're out there, I've got some choice words for you, but I'm a nice person and I'm not going to say
it. Well, I was called the...
I was going to just say to learn how to drive.
Yeah.
In with the butterflies, out with the bees. In with the butterflies,
but see, they get in with the bees and then worse.
And then they just hold them in.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Right. So I don't know, people, just be happy. Put on our podcast. And if you're really
the holidays
angry,
are coming. Nothing says happiness like holidays, right?
I know, exactly.
Holidays, family stress, mean uncles that get drunk and say inappropriate things, you know, too much room in the house, all the money spent. Come on.
But
now.
You know what though? We have the 12 Nightmares of Christmas coming.
Yeah, we do.
That's all you have to do is put in those earbuds and just have fun and listen to us and forget the family. Yep. Actually, we have the whole thing completed already, thanks to our dear producer, Nico, for pushing us. Thank you, Nico.
Could you
so
imagine?
We have it all done.
It's like easy sailing now.
I know. I know.
That was a lot of work, too, let me tell you.
It's good, though. I know, but it's done with, and now it's...
Yeah,
that's
it.
Yeah, it's all done, and it's good this year, I think.
I think it's good every year, but we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
I think I've learned a lot of new horrible people that I wanted to share with you. So,
boy, are they awful too? Let's be honest,
they are awful
people. Awful people.
All right. Well, that's all the things.
That's all the goodness we have today.
Yeah.
Bitching about driving and serial killers. Want
to
be
just saying, be nice to each other. Try to. I know it sucks right now, but it's got to get better, right?
I think so. I hope
it will.
All right.
Anyway, that's it for me.
That's it for me, too. Hey, Jen, remember, lock your doors
and keep passing by those open windows.
Bye bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Vane. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
First, police go to the airport to look for his car and they can't find it. They search for his name on...
Hold on. Sorry, Nico, I just made a really weird noise with my throat, so hopefully you can get that. That
did you
happened
burp?
At 9:09. No, I took a drink, and you know how it gurgles in your throat sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what it did. So and it showed up, the sound waves showed up on the screen.
It was
so,
the devil. Devil.
It was the devil.
It's the devil.
Devil
flying.
It's the devil. He wants to come see what's up. Sorry.
It was only a few hours until police get a phone call from a man named Giles.
Is it Giles or Giles?
I think it's Giles. Giles Garage. That's our neighbor, Giles. Tarot? Hold on. Damn it. I was doing some good, too. It's Giles. And then Garote. Garote. Mm-hmm. Tarot. Tarot. But he goes by it.
Like Murder, She Wrote, but Giles Tarot?
he needed to enter through a garage first before coming to the house.
About Sheena. I think of Sheena Easton. And when you say directions, I think he's got to take the morning train because he works to 9 to 5.
I would have went Sheena, the warrior, princess
that's
warrior.
That's Zena.
Oh, that's Zena. Okay, sorry. Mm. Whatever.
My baby takes the morning train. He works from 9 to 5 and then he takes another home again. Sorry. I
just
had that
like
45 okay. And I played it all the time.
I know. It was amazing, right?
I'm Mike Morford, and I've been researching the Zodiac case for years. Zodiac, just the name. It sounds sinister. It inspires fear. The fact that a serial killer would give himself this moniker is disturbing. He would go on to taunt police by sending letters and codes to newspapers for years. And the attacks, they were something else altogether. If you were a young couple in a secluded area, you could easily be a target. And it wasn't just shootings on dark lovers' lanes. Zodiac would even attack with a knife in broad daylight while wearing an executioner-style hood. After a while, Zodiac changed tactics, and even lone cab drivers weren't safe. The Zodiac killer terrorized the San Francisco Bay Area and then vanished. But he left a lot of clues behind along the way. Clues that we're going to examine closely on the new podcast, Zodiac Speaking. New episodes of Zodiac Speaking come out every other Saturday starting March 13, 2021. Subscribe today wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single episode.